was holding, but only just, a very large bone in his mouth. It was wider than he was long, and might have belonged to something that died in a tar pit. It was green and furry in places. "How nice," she said coldly. "Look, you go on, let me see what I can do." "If you're sure," said Carrot, in a reluctant tone of voice. "Yes." When he'd gone, Angua headed for the nearest alley. There were only a few minutes to moonrise. Sergeant Colon saluted when Carrot came back, frowning in thought.
"We can go home now, sir," he suggested.
"What? Why?"
"Now it's all sorted out."
"I just said that to waylay suspicion," said Carrot.
"Ah, very clever," said the sergeant quickly. "That's what I thought. He's saying that to waylay suspicion, I thought.
There's still a murderer out there somewhere, or something worse." Carrot ran his gaze over the ill-assorted soldiery. "But right now I think we're going to have to sort out this business with the day watch," he said.
People say it's practically a riot up there," said Colon.
"That's why we've got to sort it out." Colon bit his lip. He was not, as such, a coward. Last year the city had been invaded by a dragon, and he'd actually stood on a rooftop and fired arrows at it while it was bearing down on him with its mouth open, although admittedly he'd had to change his underwear afterwards. But that had been simple. A great big fire-breathing dragon was straightforward. There it was, right in front of you, about to broil you alive. That was all you had to worry about. Admittedly, it was a lot to worry about, but it was simple. It wasn't any kind of mystery.
"We're gonna have to sort it out," he said.
"Yes."
"Oh, good. I like sorting things out."
Foul Old Ron was a Beggars Guild member in good standing. He was a mutterer, and a good one. He would walk behind people muttering in his own private language until they gave him money not to. People thought he was mad, but this was not technically the case. It was just that he was in touch with reality on the cosmic level and had a bit of trouble focusing on things smaller, like other people, walls, and soap. Although on very small things, such as coins, his eyesight was grade A. Therefore, he was not surprised when a handsome young woman streaked past him and removed all her clothes. This sort of thing happened all the time, although up until now only on the inner side of his head. Then he saw what happened next. He watched as the sleek golden shape streaked away.
I told him, he said. I'll give him the wrong end of a ragman's trumpet, so I shall. Bugger him, millennium hand and shrimp, I told him.
Gaspode wagged what was technically a tail when Angua re-emerged.
"Change into something more suitable," he said, his voice slightly muffled by the bone. "Good one. I brung you this little token."
He dropped it on the cobbles. It didn't look any better to Angua's lupine eyes.
"What for?" she said. "Stuffed with nourishing marabon jelly, that bone," he said accusingly.
"Forget it," said Angua. "Now, how do you normally get into the Assassin's Guild?"
"Maybe afterwards we could kind of hang out in the middens along Phaedra Road," said Gaspode, his stump of a tail still thumping the ground. "There's rats along there that'll make your hair stand on it. No? All right, forget I mentioned it."
He finished quickly, when fire flashed for a moment in Angua's eyes. He sighed.
"There's a drain by the kitchens," he said.
"Big enough for a human?"
"Not even for a dwarf, but it won't be worth it. It's spaghetti tonight. You don't get many bones in spaghetti."
"Come on." He limped along.
"That were a good bone," he said. "Hardly even started going green, eh? I bet you wouldn't say no to a box of chocolates from Mr. Hunk, though."
He cringed as she rounded on him.
"What are you talking about?"
"Nothing, nothing."
He trailed after her, whining. Angua wasn't happy either. It was always a problem growing her hair and fangs every full moon. Just when she thought she'd been lucky before, she'd found that few men are happy in a relationship where their partner grows hair and howls. She'd sworn no more entanglements like that. As for Gaspode, he was resigning himself to a life without love, or at least any more than the practical affection experienced so far, which had consisted of an unsuspecting chihuahua and a brief liaison with a postman's leg. The number one powder slid down the folded paper into the metal tube. Blast Vimes, who'd have thought he'd actually head for the opera house? He'd lost a set of tubes up there. But there were still three left, packed neatly in the hollow stock. A bag of number one powder and a rudimentary knowledge of lead casting was all a man needed to rule the city. The gun lay on the table. There was a bluish sheen to the metal, or perhaps